we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you for joining me this morning. My name is Craig Young. First thing I want to do before I start in on our subject is introduce a few people to you. One is my wife, Katie. When it's time for the question and answer session, that's the one I'm going to. And next to her is her sister, Diana. And Diana and her husband, Garth. And then Lucas and Claire, the Hutchinson family, who worked with us in France for 18 years. And Lucas and Claire were born and raised in France. So if you want to know a little more about that, you can talk to them. And we have some wonderful supporters from our church in St. Louis, who's been sponsoring us since 1990. 28 faithful years, and grateful to God for that. As a family, we have been on the mission field there at Fort Marseille for 28 years, Katie and I, with our two girls. Our two girls, who are both Pepperdine graduates now, which is fun. And we'll get to see a picture of them right here. And so are Lucas and Claire. Thank God. Yes. So we got a bunch of them in the family, which is really great. And I am right now working on some doctoral work on developing leaders who come from a Muslim background. Looking at leadership emergence for those who are coming from a Muslim background. And that's not the subject today, but that's given me the opportunity to have a lot of interaction with a lot of wonderful Christian brothers and sisters who come from a Muslim background. And the subject that we are looking at today is the idea of a dwelling place. I'm going to develop that for you. And I want to start in the scriptures with that. Psalm 84, and I'll read it to you, says, "How lovely is your dwelling place, Lord Almighty," the dwelling place. "My soul yearns, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself where she may have her young, a place near your altar. Lord Almighty, my King and my God, blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you." Now, I do all that I do, and I speak all that I speak in French all the time, because I live there, work there. And so I had to slip in a little bit of French this morning to you. And I want to invite the rest of the family up to join me, and we're going to sing this psalm for you in French this morning. So you get a little flavor of what life is like for us. And Freddie, you're going to come push the buttons, and I'll slide over this way. And you can follow along the words on the screen.
Right,
you guys ready?
Hold on.
Where
do I push?
Let me see. Right, you can push. We'll start. You can push this one. Yeah. And I'll give you the Psalm 84 in the first words. You're all set.
Le fruit vers son nid, je
there's a longing for a dwelling place for each of us. And a song is one of the ways that helps us to see that. A place of peace sometimes is not what you think it might be. This is called Peace in the Storm by Jack Dawson. And what's so great about this is the world that is raging around you. In the middle of all that, there's a tiny little place in the rock where there's a little bird in a little nest taking care of some young.
Aww.
And this was an award-winning work of art. Talk about peace. Peace in our world doesn't come when everything is smooth on the ocean. But when we're in the hand of God in the middle of the storm. Let me begin by telling you about my home, Marseille. 2,600 years of history in Marseille. And Marseille is a city that has both European and North African roots. And so I live in a place where I am surrounded by Muslims in Marseille. 35% of the city is North African, Tunisian, Moroccan, and most of all, Algerian. In our neighborhood, it's actually more like 50% of the population that we interact with all the time. That's our home in Marseille. This is our little neighborhood. Culturally Catholic on one side of the railroad tracks, culturally Muslim North African on the other side of the railroad tracks, and we sit right in the middle. Now, I also want to tell you, before we talk about Muslims, that I am not in ignorance about terrorism. In fact, France has become the number one target for terror in the world, as far as Islamic extremism is concerned. And this is not a nice attack that you are looking at here. This is the city of Nice, and the attack in Nice where 84 people were killed. Terrorism in France is being pushed by all kinds of forces, ISIS being one of them. And so when I talk about terrorism, I like to talk to you about the Muslim religion a little bit and let you understand that when those who are following ISIS go and do what they do, the source of their action comes from what? The Quran. Okay? They are acting in accordance with the Quran. Understand that. We host a group of Syriac Christians every Saturday afternoon. They don't have a building, and so they come and hang out in ours on Saturday afternoons. Syriac, as in Syria, as in one of the oldest Christian groups from the Middle East. And here they are in Marseille. And occasionally we have gatherings where others come together. And one night we had a gathering of French Catholics with a gathering of Syriac Christians. And we put them together and started talking about Islam. Well, here's how the conversation goes. The French Catholics say, you know, it's such a shame that all these things are happening to a religion of peace like Islam. To which our Syrian brothers and sisters respond, are you kidding me? See, where we come from in the world has a lot to do with our vision of what we see in Islam. The roots are there to provoke and create things that exist like ISIS. The list of terror attacks in France is long and recent. Okay? This is ongoing. And since this list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 major attacks, we had one less than 8 months ago in Marseille, where two young women were stabbed to death by an Islamic terrorist. And we also had a man who gave his life to save others in the midst of a terrorist attack. You see, the people who commit these terrorist attacks are not refugees in France, contrary to popular belief. The people who commit these terrorist acts all have French passports, most of whom are second-generation North African immigrants to France. They have been disenfranchised. They have been put out. They have been ostracized. And they have found meaning in extremism. How do we respond to this? Well, this man, Arnaud Bertram, gave his life to save others who were hostages in a city in southwest France in March, just about 6 weeks ago. He went in, took their place, and was shot by the terrorists who had taken the hostages. Our response to this can cost us our life. A loving response to this can cost us our life. How do we respond? Well, with love, of course. You have heard it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. That's the call to love. But this morning, I want you to think about this idea. Are Muslims really, really our enemies? I'd like to take a closer look and consider this question. How many Muslims can read classic Arabic?
Very few.
The Quran is written in classic Arabic. The number of Muslims who can actually read the Quran is very limited. And the Quran must not be translated into any other language. It is not valid, spoken in any other language, but classical Arabic. The majority of them function very differently from what is written in the Quran. Perhaps Paul's words have a little application for us here. He says, when Gentiles who do not have the law, it's a stretch, it's not biblical, but let's say do not have the Quran, do by nature the things that are required by the law, they are law for themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts. Their conscience is also bearing witness, and their thoughts, sometimes accusing them, and other times defending them. You can look for the word love in the Quran. You're going to have a hard time finding it. But I just left the previous session in the other building where Iranian brothers and sisters said, you know, I just feel like love is the answer. Where do they get that? God is at work. God is doing things. God is touching hearts. God is acting and moving. And we can see the other as someone in whom God is acting and moving. We can approach that differently. Many Muslims act out of the law written on their heart. Now today, besides the Muslims that have been in Marseille for generations, we do have a wave of immigrants arriving in Marseille from North Africa and from the Middle East. And we received a letter from a pastor from Syria on this subject. He wrote to the French pastor group, and we got our hands on this letter. He says, dear pastors in Europe, you have a golden opportunity. Families are arriving on your shores. They are broken, hurting, and in great need. A warm welcome could change their lives and their perspectives and their beliefs in less time than it takes to say so. They are fleeing from the tyranny of Islam and battling on the inside with their convictions. These Muslims are victims of Islam. They need someone to open their eyes. No more need for sending missionaries. They're coming to your doorstep. Now is the time to act. Pray. Have faith, share good news, meet their physical needs, and most of all, love them. Build relationship with them, one family at a time. Wise words. Deuteronomy chapter 10, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. And what else does he do? He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. Let's pray together. Father, we are contemplating what you are doing in this world right now, especially amongst those who come out of the Muslim faith. You have totally turned that world upside down in so many ways, and you have created incredible opportunity for us who know you to walk in and share the good news of Jesus. Father, I pray that you will give us greater wisdom, that you will guide our steps as we do this. give us great love for each one who is before us. May we be people of peace ourselves to those who are looking for you. And Lord, may we all together experience the joy that comes in knowing Jesus. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen. The Muslims are coming as victims of Islam. We went to Greece. We've gone twice with our students. We have a training program in Marseille. We've gone twice to Greece to help with the refugees there. If you want to know what a dwelling place for refugees looks like, go to the Ammonia Church in downtown Athens and find your way to Eleni, and you will know all about that. That is the example par excellence for reaching out to those who are coming in as refugees. And I want to share some quotes from those that we spend time with. I just saw that. I should have asked. I prefer, if we not do photos of the people that I'm going to show you.
Got
that,
it, thanks.
I probably should have stipulated. No problem, but thank you for taking one. That reminded me. Here's Ali. When I'm with people like you, I have hope. And I feel like I'm walking on two legs. He lost one of them in the war in Syria. Ishmael says, well, you know, I said, why do you come back every day? I come here for the love. I come here for the love. Yeah. And Salah, he's a Yazidi. Yazidi is a completely different people group. They're not Muslim or Christian. And so they were a special privileged target of ISIS, these super pagans that are not one of the, you know, godly religions. He's here in this is on the naval base in Greece, right on the coast of Athens, there on the water, and they've got these places lined up for the refugees, just house after house. These are all their little homes. And Asada says, I don't want money. I don't want a house. I don't want a car. Well, that's what I thought all these refugees wanted. I just want peace. Well, what are these folks like? These are our students in Greece last year, and there's a couple others with us, and of course you guys have already figured out the response to the question. But the law school and med school students in this picture did not come to Greece from Marseille, France. The law school and med school students are these two Syrian refugees. We need to kind of reorient our picture of the people that we're interacting with and called to love. Are Muslims our enemies, or are they our allies? Context can make a huge, huge difference in that. I like to tell you a little story from our experience. We're going to go back to Marseille now after our little trip to Greece, our little mission trip to Greece. Katie and I have our two daughters born and raised on the mission field right in the urban jungle of Marseille. And when Emily, our oldest, was in third grade in the public school in Marseille, what happened? Well, she went to class, and as I said, the neighborhood was approximately, if not more than 50% North African. Can you find little Emily in this picture? She's not hard to pick out, is she? Because if you look at the picture, I asked her to send it to me, 15 of the 24 children in this picture come from Muslim families. Emily's third grade class. And Emily, when she sent me the picture in the email, she said, by the way, tell everybody that this little guy right here, his name is Islam. Yeah, the guy in the red shirt, Islam. Okay. This is our neighborhood. This is our world. What does that mean? Well, we're in hyper-secular atheist France. So when this third grade teacher over here, he kind of fits the mold, starts telling these third graders that God does not exist and mocks, right in the class, in the third grade class, anybody who could absolutely think the ridiculous idea that God exists, what happens? Well, little French guys and girls, they fall right in line. And Emily suddenly becomes aware of the huge chasm that exists between her and her little French counterparts in the third grade class. But something else happens after class. What does Emily learn? Well, there was a whole bunch of other people in that classroom that did not agree with their little third grade teacher. there were a whole bunch of allies of Emily, our daughter, in that classroom. And they were all Muslims. Depends where you are in the world, what an ally and an enemy looks like. When we talk about sharing love, we seem sometimes to have so little in common with those who come from this part of the world, and it's very difficult to do so. Developing the language of love, first of all, the language itself, doing something in Arabic, for example, can be extremely difficult for us. But there is a language of love that goes above and beyond even the language barriers that we might have. And when we're interacting with people, especially coming out of difficult circumstances like many that you might be meeting here in the States as refugees, we've got to be ready for some challenging things. Like, hey, let's have a Google conversation. Okay. So I'll start tapping in Arabic my first sentence of the conversation. Tell me about yourself. Well, I start tapping in conversation, Google Translate. And Google Translate says, my entire family was killed by ISIS and I'm the only one who survived. Where do you go from there in the conversation? This is at our church. We welcomed this family from Syria, and that's Angelique, beautiful little baby. Okay, and we're so excited. Oh, this is so wonderful, this beautiful little baby. And her mom says, yes, we just had her to replace her 10-year-old sister who was killed by a bomb. Okay. A dwelling place. A place for people who are suffering. You know the expression, a humble abode. Okay? Now I'm going to do a little Bible. That's what we're talking about. Your humble abode is your dwelling place, where you abide. And biblically, it's beautiful. We're in John between chapter 13 and 16 here. Jesus says, right in the middle, John chapter 15, beginning of 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do nothing. Right before that, what do we have? Jesus telling them about peace. End of chapter 14. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives. The peace I give you is my peace. In this abode, in this dwelling place, it's a place of peace. Right after the abode, what do we talk about? Chapter 15, verse 9 to 11. Just as the Father has loved me, so I love you. Abide in my love. Abide in my love. Abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. Peace, love, joy. Well, we've got the first three fruit of the Spirit right there. Boom. Right out of the heart of Jesus, right out of the heart of this text. This is what exists in the dwelling place, in the abode. I'd like to put some other words on it that can speak to us a little bit in a very practical way. We go about creating an abode for others. The three words are time, expectation, and delight. First of all, the Muslims that you will be interacting with here and that we are interacting with in Marseille are called, what we could say, the Muslims of the diaspora. That is, they are Muslims outside of Muslim countries. That's a different ballgame for them and for us. Where these Muslims fit in and find a place of security and dwelling is our big question. And how can we provide that? It's our big question. Can they find it in your home? A place of security and dwelling, peace and love and joy? Can you find it in their home? Can you both find it in a church? Perhaps, if that church functions as a home full of peace and love and joy. What do we need to become as we become all things to all men? What do we need to become to our Muslim neighbors who are around us? Well, first of all, we need to become a friend. And how do we share our faith with our Muslim friends as we are their friends? Well, we do so with our life. With, for example, giving and receiving hospitality. Or in my case, and I'm going to tell you a lot more about that, receiving and receiving and receiving and receiving hospitality. All the time. All the time. You, my Muslim friend, are going to experience love because I'm going to devote time to love you. Now, time in our world is probably the most precious commodity that we can give. And we have a hard time doing so. I like to talk about time at two different levels. We've got two worlds that come crashing together. When you go to Starbucks, how much time do you spend at Starbucks? You can get in and out of Starbucks in 15 minutes between your classes. Maybe some of you were there just before coming here. Okay? When you go to our Muslim brother's house for a cup of coffee, how much time do you spend there? Now people start laughing.
An hour.
Who have had the experience. Okay? One aspect of time. There's another. Katie and I come out of a little bit of a history of Christian conversion. Where we date ourselves. We were part of a movement in the 1900s. And literally, everything was laid out. 6 weeks, you could meet and convert a person. In 6 weeks, somebody remembers that? Yeah, okay. And if not, what do? We dust off our feet, okay? I'd like to talk to you about something different. Generational vision. This is another way to look at the world. I'd like to talk to you about 6 years instead of 6 weeks. Do we have that kind of time? Do we have that kind of time in relationship with others? You, my Muslim friend, are going to experience peace because there will be no time's up. There will be no time's up. No. That end is open. My only expectation is that I'm going to love you and devote time to love you. That's it. That's it. I invite you to consider that kind of dwelling place. A dwelling place that is safe to be in because it's a place where you are loved unconditionally. And the fact that you are going to convert, in my mind, is a condition, if I apply it, that makes my love for you no longer unconditional. Is everybody following me? Enjoy. I want to quote Evelyn because Evelyn is French. She also happened to be one of my professors at Fuller, and she has done a tremendous amount of work. Her doctoral thesis was on the attunement theory applied to French and North African Christian relationships in churches. Because you know, it's really hard for French and North Africans to function together in churches. We don't have any issues like that in our churches here, but in France they do. Okay? And here's what she has to say. She says, I have people asking me all kinds of questions like this as I travel and I speak, and they say, we would love to connect with Muslims in our neighborhood, but don't know how. Interesting, Evelyn's response to you is one word, joy. I recommend joy. Start to enjoy them as human beings, to delight in them. This is how the bond will form. Very true. Very true. And we do delight so much in the wonderful brothers and sisters that we have in Marseille that come out of a Muslim life. A joy. Well, maybe at this point you're saying, okay, love, peace, no conditions, timeless, at least a generation. What happened to evangelism? Did we drop the ball on that? Not at all. Not at all. In fact, you will find your Muslim friends probably much more interested in talking about matters of faith than the other friends that you have around you who are typical secular, non-church-going Americans. Much more interested. And you'll be free to do so. But before you speak, what's a great idea?
Right.
Listen.
Listen.
Take the time to listen. To learn, to discover their world and their vision. of it. We have so much to learn. And the other thing that's a great idea to do is to pray. Pray for them. Pray with them. I have never had a Muslim turn me down for prayer. I have, however, missed many opportunities to pray because I didn't dare to ask. These are the people that were dealing with here. And we have a dwelling place full of friends that see the world the same. Great things can happen. Now, when we go into the faith perspective here, and I'm going to speak out of my experience, I'm sure there are many others, but I will speak out of mine. One of the challenges we have is that we don't understand conversion from a Muslim perspective. Some of the statistics I've read say that 75% of Muslim converts return to Islam. Mm. And I thought I saw somebody else here who was in the session yesterday. Dan, 90%?
At the Blue Med Conference in Malta in February, they were saying that 90% of those that convert as they come into Europe go back within 18 months to Islam.
Okay. Mm-hmm. These are refugees. I have a thesis on that that's going to cost you. Here's what's happening. The cultural strongholds for Muslims, what are they? Family and community. Okay? A refugee is somebody who's lost the essential elements of their existence, family and community. If they do not replace family and community, even if they come into a Christian context for a while, and there's no family community connection there, what I'm hearing, 90% of them are going to go back to a family and community connection. Okay? A Muslim without family and community is lost. This is a fundamental need. What happens in the conversion process? Well, let's take a look at this through the eyes of a believer of Muslim background. One example, just along the way, if you haven't had the chance to read this book, do so. Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, from Nabil Quraysh. That the Lord has since taken home. But just an incredible learning experience to read this book. But with all that he's lived and all that he's experienced and all the things that happened to him when he lost his family and everything else, I dedicate this book to my parents, who he may not have ever seen again, but he dedicates the book to mom and dad, family. Okay? This community issue is so important that when you have the time to let it develop, here's an example of what can happen. Okay? Khaled and Jijiga said their names. I couldn't help it. I was supposed to try to come up with something.
We won't remember.
We'll hold on to that. Okay? What's happening? A conversion inversion. Okay? Baptism is not going to be the first step in Muslim conversion. It's going to be the last step. And there's a whole lot of other things that have to get in place first. If we can understand that, we can go along for the ride. That's quite a ride. But here's one of them. They're going to come along as Muslims. This is 2002. 6 years before his baptism. 6 years before his baptism, he's saying, can you name our children? What's that all about? Family, community is essential. I want to go down this road. If I'm going to go down this road, it's going to be family and community for me. Okay? What happens spiritually in these cases is understanding that idea. The baby's born. And so they say, will you bless our baby? Can we have a dedication for our baby at church? I don't know how many of you have had a dedication for a Muslim baby with Muslim parents at your church. But we have. Why? This is all a part of the process. Okay? Family and community. We're going to put the essential elements in place. Baptism at the other end of this room. Conversion inversion. See the picture? Okay. At one point, Carrot said, you know, I'm too old to be baptized. He was in his 30s. But it's good for my kids. My kids, okay, here's the battle. You know, we've got family, we've got issues. If I do this, all the stuff that attached to that, you know, maybe I can't do that with my kids. Well, as soon as he said that, I knew it was, you know, it's good. You know, it's coming, okay? Or, what else? Well, I've been coming to church for a long time now, and I see every week you share the bread and the wine in memory of Isa. Yeah? Well, I honor Isa. I'd like to share in the bread and wine with Isa. Okay? Now what do you do? Questions. He did not do that, but you know, these are questions. I love listening to the word of God. You know, when you hear the word proclaimed in a mosque, that's a very important thing. I would love to do that. Okay. Stand up and read. These are the things that go on. Do we have a place where that can happen? That might be a very, very difficult thing, to have a place where that can happen. So forgive me for a little missiology, okay? But I want to talk to you about the idea of barriers and access for people. Roxburgh and Romanak, they've written this book called The Missional Leader. Okay, they get into a little bit of an idea, and they talk about the way we do church and how we've got circles, we've got barriers for who's in and who's out. Okay, for example, a baby dedication for a Muslim family, we can't do that. That's outside the circle. So that doesn't go. Okay, or the guy's a Muslim, we can't give him any responsibility in this church. Could you imagine if somebody was a Muslim could be responsible for something? That's outside the circle. We can't go there. Okay, or, you know, what if he's not been baptized yet? Since he's not been baptized, therefore, this whole realm of activity is off limits. These are all the questions that we had to go through when we're taking our time and we're living the conversion inversion and we're walking our way to conversion in reverse. What if we break down those barriers? What about a context without these barriers? Okay? What about direction? And taking somebody who's moving toward Christ and walking alongside them and saying, let's go. Let's go toward Christ. And we're going to just walk with them toward Christ. Who's outside of their comfort zone? Probably not him, me. Okay. This is the conversion inversion. And if you're catching on real well, the Muslim is not the only one that goes through the conversion inversion. Somebody else does. Well, it gets messy. And that's why somebody wrote a book called Messy Church. Probably. Because it does get messy. And here's five values of a messy church. That, you know, I don't even know that I can recommend the book, but I love this idea, five values. It's Christ-centered. It's going toward Christ. It's not church structure-centered, for example. Okay? It's hospitable. What a fundamentally key and parentheses, the hospitality takes place in the home, not in the restaurant. Huge leap for us. Huge leap for us. Okay? It's creative, and we're going to talk about the creativity part of it. It's celebratory. Joy is a part of the picture. And it's intergenerational. You know, I got to go back here. Dwelling place. Do you know what the dwelling place is for Jijiga, this Muslim mommy with a little baby? Right here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's books called Attractional Church and all that. You want to get into all that kind of stuff? You want to do Attractional Church for Muslims? How many grandmoms do you have in your church? Mm-hmm. You see the world differently. This is peace and love and security. Grandmas, you got a great job to do for evangelizing Muslims. Oh, that's different. Yeah. Intergenerational. They need to see that. You know, again, again, we've come out of some of our stuff is, it's all going to fit the boomers, or, you know, then we got to go into the millennials, and we got, the more gray hair you got, the more secure you are in their world. Thank God. Good. And then we turn to the other side. What happens after conversion? What happens when, as a Muslim, you become a Christian? What happens if you, like Khaled do, announce that, you know, I think I'm the first person in my family who's been baptized in 1,000 years. No euphemism intended. Different picture of time once again. Right? What happens? Well, you see what Khaled did. When that day came, there was new family and new community. Everything was in place. And it was a good thing. And he knew what he was doing, even though we didn't know what we were doing. Okay. Here it comes. Immediately ostracized from your family. Okay. Khaled was a man with a lot of gifts to help his family out. He helped everybody in his family. He becomes a Christian. He goes down home to Algeria. The dad lays out the inheritance. 7 brothers. All the brothers get 7 1/7 shares. Khaled's out. He's sitting there. He gets absolutely nothing. He provided for all of them. He's out. He's out. That's it. He happens to live in a context where nobody's going to come and attack him and do all that kind of stuff, but he's out. He's out. And then what happens? Well, his daughter gets hit by a car. So we have some gifts that came over for Lily. The question is, why did she get hit by a car? So, another cultural identity issue. The reason that Lily got hit by a car is because the lady was careless and was not looking. Correct? No. That's not why Lily got hit by a car. Lily got hit by a car, according to Khaled's family, as payback from God for becoming a Christian.
Oh.
That's why Lily got hit by a car. Understanding why things happen can help us understand what folks go through. That's why Lily got hit by a car. These are the challenges that our brothers and sisters face after conversion. Where does Khaled go with all that? Where does he go with all that? To a dwelling place. Got to be a place. Family, the community, it's all there. And if it's not there, and when it's not there, 90% of the cases in short term, and 75% maybe a little larger, it's not there. And it's essential. And when it's not there, it's not a part of the picture. I got to tell you a little more about the way God works in hearts and what happened. Lily got hit by a car. Just 2 seconds, just to give you a beautiful picture of how beautiful these hearts are in Christ. She gets hit. The woman who hit her was in at fault. She was also a Muslim. Again, you know, one chance in two that it would have been Muslim in Marseille. And never came to the house, never acknowledged, never did anything with the family. And the police get involved, and so they bring in the family, Khaled and his daughter, and they say, okay, you know, time to set up and press charges. Do you want to press charges? And for some reason, the police officer asked Lily the question. Khaled had already talked about it with his family, the other side, Jijiga, and they were going to say, yeah, we need to press charges. And the police officer asked, Lily, are we going to press charges? And Lily says, no, sir, we're Christians. We're going to forgive her. So you can thank God for that little girl. And Khaled, as he said, you know, then the police officer said, well, sir, it's your decision, Khaled.
Yeah.
Of course, we're going to do what she said. Beautiful. Now, there's another generation coming up in all this. Okay? We have the joy of seeing second generation. So Khaled's daughter is baptized in this picture, and it's beautiful. And what happened in the diaspora, that doesn't happen in Algeria, where he's shunned. In the diaspora, where these people are in your world and in my world, things can be a little more fuzzy. 14 Muslims came to this baptism. 14 Muslims were in our church to witness this baptism. Things are starting to break and shake. And almost all these Muslims in the diaspora, if they're starting as refugees or if they've been there a few generations like the people that we're with, they come or they become or they are what I'm calling in a large sense third culture people. They live at the chasm, at the cross point between two cultures. Behind closed doors, it's a North African Muslim culture that they live in the home. It's the language of North Africa that's spoken. Khaled and Jijiga are from Kabylie. They speak Kabylie. It's not even Arabic. Okay, and that world is functioning behind the closed door. Outside the door, once you step into France, it's a secular, atheistic world that they live in. And they got to bring these two worlds together. Very tricky. There's Khaled and Lydia in a more recent picture. So we got questions like this. This is one of the young men who is a Christian in the church today. And when we first met him out on the soccer field, called him Sofiane. And then we found out that his name's Christopher. Well, which is it? He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Okay. Why is that? Well, mother, Muslim contacts, puts Sofiane on his birth certificate. Grandmother, interracial marriage mix and all that, French, slips in on the day the birth certificate is registered and puts Christopher on there. And Christopher lives in between. Who is he? We took Christopher with us to Greece. And he had a terribly difficult time. You know why? All the refugees came up to Christopher. You'll see his face again in a little bit. And they started talking to him in Arabic. But Christopher doesn't speak Arabic. He was offended. Why do they think I'm Arabic? Well, sorry, look, there's a mirror right there. Yeah. How do they live then? Very challenging. Okay. Well, we've got the blessing of a church folk. Oh, yeah, you saw. Freddie's son was in that picture as well. This is our little, just a little snapshot of our third culture generation. This was just one of those fun shots I came back to, and I thought, wow, this is it. This is the bunch. Okay. This is the most loving, wonderful, sweet group of kids you could ever imagine. And they're living in between two worlds. Yeah. So, the other question that we have to address when we talk about a dwelling place and creating one is the way we handle what's on the inside of us. So, when you look at these two guys, if I got rid of this question and I just put a little CNN corner, what do you got? Okay. We have some work to do. We have to deal with our fear. Christopher and Khaled is a son and a brother. Just the most incredible, wonderful people walking with God that he's put in our lives. What happens with our neighbors when you have a Muslim family over for a barbecue in your backyard? You got to deal with your fear. And your fear is there. And often very, very misplaced. You have fear just looking at a picture, and then you got a fear of your neighbor in your backyard when you're in your backyard. And in the church. So last summer I did go around a bunch of our churches and I talked about loving Muslims and taking care of refugees, and I was out of context. I live in France all the time. I don't live here. So I was not on the same page. And what happens after I'm done? Well, I got people come up and say, wow, that's really courageous of you to choose such a politically charged topic to talk about in church. Let me just say something very clearly. Taking care of refugees and loving Muslims is not political. Mm-hmm. It's biblical.
Yes.
And if we lose that, we're in grave danger. Grave danger. But that fear, we had a short-term mission trip, and we had a group come over, wonderful people that come over from the States to help us out in France. We have a Bible camp in France that we run, and we have people that come over and help us keep that camp going, and it's phenomenal. And this year, I said to that group before we headed out, I said, listen, you guys are here on mission, and you're awesome, and you know what? This is just gold as an opportunity. I am inviting a refugee family to join us up at camp for a week. I mean, you talk about a dwelling place. This is it. First person that comes up to me afterward says what? Craig, do you know these people? We wouldn't want to be bringing any terrorists up there. Right out of the box. We got to deal with our fear. And it's so misplaced. And again, I live in the terror capital of the world right now. Not ignorant of that. But we've got to deal with our fear. This is the little family we were talking about. Fear kills a dwelling place right on the spot. At the end of that week, he says, if everyone was like you, there'd be no more. He got the picture of the dwelling place. So facing our fear. Well, we've got this cultural fear. It's called ethnocentrism. We've got to keep that in check. We've got a ritual fear. That's our legalism. That keeps us from allowing the church to be a place where people can move along, and we've got to deal with that. And of course, what casts it out? Perfect love casts out fear. So I want to finish just with a couple of examples and ideas about creating dwelling places. Those who come out of this culture love to practice hospitality. Let yourself be invited over and enjoy yourself. This is two Syrian refugee families inviting us over for a meal. Spread it right out on the floor and enjoy. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. By doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. What if God was actually sending us angels? We wouldn't want to miss out on that, would we? Khaled says, and this is Khaled. It's not me. This is him. If I could, I'd share every meal with someone else. There's always a place for a guest at my table. And anyone in this room who has been to Marseille knows that that is not a joke. If you want to get Khaled upset, what do? You say no. You get him up here. No, I can't come. What do you? This is culture. Beautiful. And so here, well, yeah, I was going to call him Samir, but I didn't do it. This is at his home. Right? Now here's, how am I doing?
You're
great. I got 5 minutes. I'm doing great. Okay. This guy. This is what happens when God takes a Muslim and brings him into a vision for mission. Okay? This guy, Funk, we met 25 years ago. And Funk, at 51, hits rock bottom and decides that this is the day he's going to end his life. But he remembers that we knew each other back at the church, and so he comes by the church on that day. Well, Khaled happens to live right at the church. He's the face of the church. And Khaled sees this guy kind of wandering around out front. What can I do for you? Well, invites him in. They go in the church. They sit down in the chapel, and the guy just cries, and Khaled just sits there. Just amazing, beautiful. But he found him also a nice atheist with absolutely no hope and no direction and no anything. Found hope sitting down with a Algerian guy who knows Jesus. You know, this is the kind of stuff. And so this is at Khaled Njijiga's home. He can't be happier than when his table is full. Here's some other ways to do it. Our daughter Emily and her husband Rob were married 2016, married in Marseille, and we've got our wonderful North African family that's part of all that, and they just want to do something for Emily and Rob. We said, great. So, boom, we're going to take a little trip to North Africa for the rehearsal dinner. Okay. How do we create a dwelling place? We honor culture, we incorporate it. You know, so Rob's in the class. This is the traditional dress for the man the night before, the day before the wedding and all that kind of stuff. And half of these are North African, half of them are French who love to get dressed up in those beautiful North African dresses. So that's what that group is. And then, you know, we got the refugees coming in every week. We're doing stuff with them, and so we do special activities for them, the Christmas party, for one. And then birthday parties. And this is one of my favorites. Pascal, one of our members, just has a beautiful way with these folks. And since her name is Pascal, and in French, that's the idea of Passover, the Pascal, Passover lamb, the Pascal name. So she's got a name that allows her to share the whole gospel. Mm-hmm. And so she has a birthday party, and she does that. Boom. And here they are in our fellowship hall having a big birthday celebration, and you start seeing the burqas on the heads of folks that were there, because there's about 40 Muslims that came to Pascal's birthday. And then after all the fun, we go into our chapel, and we have a game. And the game is to help teach the message of the Bible that Pascal wanted to teach at her birthday. Beautiful way to create a dwelling place. It can happen out on the soccer field. That's where we met Christopher. That's where we take a lot of these young refugee guys to go do some activity. And we have a bunch of Christians together get out on the soccer field. So wherever your sports, that becomes a dwelling place, and you can do that there. And then even the concerts and stuff. We have a choral group in Marseille, and I just thought this was fun because Namis, she sends this out, and you can see it written up in Arabic there. She's sending it to all her Arabic friends. Okay? The activity at the church becomes a dwelling place. And then, as we mentioned, the acts of service. That was mentioned this morning as well. Bring them along to serve. Give them opportunity to do so. And they become a part of the dwelling place. You have exactly what every Muslim. Exactly what every Muslim is. The love and peace of Christ. So may God open our eyes. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. That's one of the songs we love to sing. Actually learned that and sang it in Arabic. I'm not going to do it right now. But may God open the eyes of our hearts. Pretty much out of time. It's lunchtime. I don't know if anybody has a question they want to ask, or and just come up and see me, but thank you for your attention. Yes.
When you pray with him, you say we pray in the name of Jesus?
Absolutely. And no problem. Yep. Very respectful of us. I've not had an issue with it. Good, very good question. Yes.
Deal with the cultural differences. There, the male-female hierarchy is very defined in that culture. It would be inappropriate for me to go talk to a woman.
Very good.
How do you deal with that in the context of this?
Exactly, just the way you said, the guys with the guys and the women with the women. Absolutely, that's very typical. Now that, again, that breaks down in French society, that gets broken down some, the folks that work on it. But yes, that's an absolute valid consideration, and that's kind of the way we work it, the guys with the guys and the women with the women. Absolutely, yes.
Just to let you know, I'm also ex-Muslim that converted 3 years ago. And I was not a refugee. I've been living here for many, many years. But finally, you know, I accepted the Lord because some of my family who were in Europe, they were Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to Church of Christ in Mission Viejo. It's very difficult when you talk to Muslim. This is like a cultural background I'm giving. That was hard for me at the beginning too.
Where are you from?
I'm from Iran.
Iran?
Yes. Because I was born Muslim. As you said, I have never read Quran, even the Farsi version, I could not understand very well. And one thing that Muslims respect Jesus as a prophet, and they have very hard time when you start saying that he's son of God, or Lord. when they shut you off. That this is like the biggest sin that you say that God has a son. How do you suggest that we should deal with that kind of when it comes to that point?
Okay. Again, I'm disclaimer. I feel like my experience is very limited. I think there's others that have more, but in my experience, I would encourage them actually to read the Quran. Surprising as that sounds, and what happened with Khaled, and then the time issue. You know, they bring that up. Say, okay, that's fine. You know, we're not gonna do a back and forth on that. That great. If you think that Jesus as Son of God is out, okay, let's go do something else. We're not going to fix that today. We got 6 years ahead of us to fix that. But in the Quran, Khaled would come back to me and start talking about all the things he's reading about Isa in the Quran. And talk about Isa raising the dead. And that was one of the things that got him, was this idea of Isa being able to resurrect the dead. And he started to work on that. And then he would just hear. You know, he would hear us preaching about Jesus being raised from the dead and what that power meant and all that stuff. He put those pieces there, but it took a lot of time. But absolutely, that is a major hurdle. And then for us, just a lot of time. Maybe I don't know how many times he heard that before he was able to say, okay, I can bring these pieces together.
Yeah, but very, very good point. There's an organization called Christian Outreach Training and Research Institute that is putting together a systematic theology of the Quran from a Christian perspective. And so the idea is to be able to first present the Quran in situations like was just discussed. So you can find more at www.kotari.org.
Dot what?
Kotari, C-O-T-A-R-I, Christian Outreach Training and Research Institute.
Well, this is kind of an aside, but I thought you said
what
that
it's
considered heresy to translate the Quran into any other language besides classic. And yet our sister mentioned the Farsi version. What is that?
Good question.
Is that allowed?
It would never be read in a mosque in the Farsi version.
So that's just for your home use.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. In mosque, probably they don't read it, but I have a Quran that it's
systematic theology.
Okay. The translations of the Quran exist in all the languages, but considered, not considered authorized.
Picked up an English version of the Quran several years ago in Barnes & Noble and read several chapters, and that's all I needed. I didn't get to them talking about Jesus resurrecting, but I didn't see any love.
Well, I can connect. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
What did Khaled read? Did he read classic Arabic?
He would have read the Arabic,
Okay. Yeah. But until you started talking to him, he had not actually read the Quran?
Probably not. He the more he's grown, now he's stepping in leadership, he's coming out with stuff that we've known each other for 17 years now, and I keep learning stuff. Some of the prayers, the five prayers of the day, are so memorized and without comprehension, and now he's going back in and reading them and saying, what was I saying?
Right.
A lot of the, you know, one of the main prayers you say 17 times a day is to curse all those of the other. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't realize that. It's just it's just coming out. So, you know, the reading, he was reading in Arabic. I don't know if he was reading in classic Arabic or not, because there's the Quran, and then just like all the other languages, evolve and progress over time. I don't know exactly what he's reading.
I just wanted to mention if any of you come across Iranian, because I was just traveling to Iran and I saw how the environment is ready for Christ. They are thirsty. To the point that I never, after like 5 years that I have converted, I never had the courage to tell my parents. Even though they could realize, because we are living in a holy city in Mashhad, with the shrine of the eighth imam is there, and before that, my conversion, as soon as I get to Iran, to my hometown, I go to shrine the next day or that same night. But I didn't go for the past few years that I've gone. I did not show interest, and even if they asked me, don't you want to go? I said, well, we go later on. Go later on. So they knew that something is off. But this year, a few months back in January, I was in Iran. I had the courage to tell my parents. Mm-hmm. When they were alone, I said, you know, especially my dad is diagnosed with cancer, mm-hmm. and they are old. I felt obligated to confess and tell them in case something happens. And one day I, you know, get them alone, just the three of us, and I told them that I want to tell you something, mm-hmm. and this is what has happened. They hugged me, they kissed me, and they said, whatever you do, you're doing the right thing. We can see it.
So praise God for that, for you. That's beautiful.
So they are thirsty. If you come across them, I think they are the easiest target to convert. I appreciate that.
In the last class, we were just an hour ago with Chris Goldman from Seattle. He had a couple of Iranian people there. And they said that the church in Iran is the fastest growing church in the world, underground right now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. That's just amazing. So they said, like what you said, that people are, the Armenians are really seeking God.
Exactly.
Yeah. The gentleman's comment about the woman and men thing, my very, very limited experience with the Iraqi refugee family is that I was able to talk to the woman, as well as the man, of course, in a very open, and she was very open in engaging in conversation. So maybe different
cultures. Yes,
different
absolutely.
They've only been here 5 years, I think.
It's more the touch is the touch is the issue that needs to be handled delicately.
My goodness. We've been hugging each
other. Yeah. Well, that's what they said. And again, I'm catching up too, because that's what they said in the last class, that the Iranian woman in question went up and hugged the preacher of the church there. So that's different than my experience. But that's happening.
It's okay.
Yep. I'm sorry. Do you have one?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry I entered late and I missed the song. Is there any possible way we could talk you guys into singing a snippet of that again?
Sure, I don't know if people have time for that, but we'd be happy to do it.
Just, you know, asking questions is great.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Okay. So, like when we were talking about the Americans promoting health, but even just when you encounter that, oh wait, we're a French church, you know, how do you bring people? How do you address that? That fear.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's a great question. We have an advantage being in a city like Marseille, where there are a lot of North Africans, but trying to valorize both is very, very challenging, and requires a lot of teaching both ways. We're trying to bring, that's what this third culture group, and that's my research for leadership, they're the ones that are going to help us do that. They're the ones that have the capacity to bring the two together. That's a conviction I have that I believe is very biblical. I have no intention of seeing a little North African church down there and a little French church over here.
Right.
But they are coming. We're in a place where that can happen easier than a context where it's very monocultural. That would be much more. But yes, that's part of our. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.